From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Now, next hour, in a two-hour discussion with Pat Buchanan, best-selling author, his new work, State of Emergency. It's all about illegal immigration, followed by open lines right here on Coast to Coast. Some of the news of the day, forecasters issuing a hurricane watch for the North and South Carolina coasts, and Virginia's governor declared a state of emergency as Tropical Storm Ernesto, who just doesn't seem to want to go away, gained strength over the Atlantic. It is now hitting the Carolinas as a tropical storm. The watch, stretching from South Carolina's Santee River to Cape Outlook in North Carolina, means hurricane conditions with sustained winds of at least 74 miles an hour are possible. After a week of weather delays, NASA officials said Wednesday's launch time next week for the space shuttle Atlantis on its mission to resume construction of the International Space Station. As we get close to that day, we'll bring in science advisor Richard C. Hoagland to give us some analysis about that very important launch. NASA has selected Lockheed Martin as the prime contractor to design, develop, and build the Orion Crew Exploration Vehicle. It's called the CEV. This is the planned replacement for the space shuttle that will become the backbone of the agency's human spaceflight program. Lockheed Martin beat out a rival bid from Northrop Grumman and Boeing to win a contract NASA said could be worth $8.15 billion. A jetliner's landing gear caught fire on the runway at Miami International Airport after two tires blew out during landing. No one injured. The fire was quickly put out. The passengers and crew, well, they escaped using those inflatable slides from the plane's exits, then waited in a grassy area near the runway. And a pilot who needed to go to the bathroom mid-flight found himself locked out of the cockpit when he tried to return. This is one bizarre story. The crew of the Air Canada Jazz flight had to remove the door from its hinges to get him back in. The pilot left the cockpit to use the washroom at the back of the plane with about 20 minutes remaining of the 2-hour and 30-minute flight. Now, don't panic. He didn't leave the cockpit empty. He left the flight's first officer in control of the plane, and a flight attendant also remained in the cockpit. But when the pilot returned, the door was stuck or locked, they say, and the pilot was unable to return to the flight deck. For about 10 minutes, passengers described seeing the pilot banging on the door and communicating with the cockpit through an internal telephone, but they just couldn't get him in. Eventually, the crew forced the door open by taking the door off its hinges completely, and the pilot safely landed the plane. Strange story. In New York, a father convinced that he was the victim of a voodoo curse, drowned his two young children in a bathtub. Then he jumped to his death in front of a subway train. Iran has defied a UN deadline to stop enriching uranium, opening the door for sanctions. However, there are no sanctions yet. They're still going to continue to talk. This thing seems to be going on forever. Lex Lonehood, our webmaster, for a moment, I thought he had lost it. He was talking on his feature story today on the coasttocoastam.com website, claiming that it looked like special agents in Roswell, New Mexico, had arrested 15 aliens working for a local company. Lex got all excited when he saw the story, only to realize that we were talking about illegal aliens. We'll be talking, don't forget, next hour with Pat Buchanan about this situation. But in a moment, our roving reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us as we talk about this very mysterious red rain from India and also aggressive military helicopters in British crop formations. All that's next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, she's an award-winning television producer, investigative reporter, and author. She goes directly to the men and women at the forefront of science and environmental challenges. Her website is earthfiles.com. She's got several books out there, Mysterious Lights in Crop Circles, Glimpses of Other Realities, Volumes 1 and 2. And she has two incredible stories for us right now on Coast to Coast AM. Hello, Linda. Welcome back.
Well, hi, George.
Always a pleasure.
Well, I'll tell you, this month of August, I have had two wonderful trips into the field to do research. And the first one was to Cardiff, Wales, where I was able to meet astrobiologist Chandra Wickramasinghe and see for myself that mysterious red rainwater from Kerala.
Ah, yes. Okay.
Remember, it was back in June I first reported.
It's a great story.
Yeah, and Professor Wickramasinghe was a colleague of astronomer Professor Fred Hoyle, and they together hypothesized long ago that all life forms in the universe would have to have the same DNA that Earth has. And this is one of the issues hanging around this red rain. And while I was in England, I also went to Oxfordshire and Wiltshire to explore crop formations and learn more about the intense, aggressive military helicopter activity in and around the crop formations. And not long after I returned from England, five circles were found all swirled clockwise in soybeans on a farm in Geneseo, Illinois. And I just got back from a trip there this past weekend. So in the second half hour, I'll have news about that new American formation and an extraordinary firsthand account about helicopters in an English crop formation.
Great. Okay.
But now I would like to go back to August 8th when I was in the microbiology lab at Cardiff University in Wales. The first surprise was Professor Wickramasinghe telling me there had been another red rain at the end of July in the state of Kerala, India, as there had been a series of red rains there over 2 months back in 2001, 5 years ago. And Professor Wickramasinghe thinks that this most recent red rain, coming almost exactly on the same date as one of the red rains 5 years ago, reinforces the idea that the Earth might be moving through cometary debris on a five-year cycle. But where would a comet get the red rain cells? And do the cells have DNA as we know DNA because they are replicating? And so far, George, no one yet knows.
Hmm.
Professor Wickramasinghe introduced me to his graduate student, Nori Miyake, who has been trying to break open the red rain cells in order to do what they call amplifying whatever DNA might be in there. And Nori showed me the pale pinkish-red rainwater in a bottle and test tubes, and you can see photographs of this red rain at my news website, earthfiles.com. At the top of the headlines page is a hot link to my report about the Cardiff lab research. And Nori told me he has never seen such thick, hard cell walls, which so far he has only partially penetrated. He is not even certain that he has extracted anything from inside the red rain cells yet, because the walls are so thick and hard to break. And when I interviewed Professor Wickramasinghe back in June, he was reluctant to give up his idea that the red rain cells must have DNA like our planets. But by August 8th, his mind was opening to the possibility that his and astronomer Fred Hoyle's panspermia theory might now have to accommodate other life in the universe that might not be exactly like Earth. I asked Professor Wickramasinghe if he thought the strange red rain cells were some unidentified Earth life or from outer space.
On the basis of the evidence that I've seen, I have to come on the side of an extraterrestrial origin for the red cells. I think the first injection of these cells in 2001 or even earlier than that most likely came from space. But on the existence or otherwise of DNA, there still remains a considerable uncertainty. I would like to think that wherever the cells came from, whether they were from the Earth or from space, that they had DNA, simply because that's the kind of life that I'm used to thinking of, that all of life on Earth is based on DNA. So it would be a great surprise if there were red biological cells that did not contain DNA. And to this day, we haven't had definitive evidence of DNA from the tests that were done by Nori. The really crucial test would be to break open the cells and to extract DNA and then to try to amplify the DNA and see whether there is DNA and the DNA is similar to such and such cell type that we recognize. The breaking of the cells turned out to be exceedingly difficult. The cell walls were robust, almost beyond belief. There was also very little evidence of anything that came out of those cells. And I think that's the bottom line, that we have to identify something that came out of the cells as being the DNA that we amplify or we try to amplify.
That is actually part of the red rain cell and not some possible contaminant from the problem of penetrating the cell.
Yeah, that's right. The problem of penetrating the cells, as I said, was horrendous, and he had to use various techniques of using ice, for instance, water ice, and then cracking open the water ice. There were techniques that were very prone to introduce contaminants, and this is the uncertainties that we have at the moment.
Is it possible that that thickness of the cell would then have evolved because you need some kind of real serious protection in an outer space environment?
I think that's true. The thickness of the cell wall is a great protection against ultraviolet radiation. And so also is the pigment. The red pigment, whatever the pigment is comprised of, also could be a protection against ultraviolet light. And I think all the indications to me are that these cells can withstand very harsh conditions, can withstand the conditions of high-speed entry into an Earth's atmosphere, and also could survive high doses of ultraviolet radiation. We'd like to do experiments to verify this, to subject the cells to high doses of UV and see what happens to them. These experiments haven't been done yet. We're planning them in the near future.
Now, the identity of the red pigment, it's been 5 years now since that first red rain. Why do you think that that red pigment, or whatever it is that makes the cells red, has not yet been identified?
The samples were available to us only relatively recently, so we haven't had much time to do all the tests that are possible. I think the tests so far would exclude a heme, iron-based pigment. Carotenoids, which are the other red, yellowish pigments, they seem to be a strong candidate for the red coloration, as they do occur, for instance, in certain yeasts. We know that there are many types of yeasts that have reddish pigments, and these are carotenoids, not anything like hemoglobin or related to hemoglobin.
Now, in the yeast that we know, what purpose does the red pigment serve?
I think the yeasts, again, present in the atmosphere, they're blown around in the Earth's atmosphere. Some yeasts have also been discovered high in the sky, in the clouds, for example. And if they are to survive conditions in the upper atmosphere, then a pigment would be of great importance to screen the DNA from ultraviolet radiation.
Oh, you mean that the red pigment could serve as some kind of a filtering mechanism?
Yeah, the red pigment would serve as a filter mechanism. It is known, I think, in the case of many pigmented bacteria and pigmented microorganisms generally, that the red pigments serve precisely this purpose.
And it would be filtering UV. And one speculation was that perhaps the red pigment might provide the energy for the cell if you cannot find DNA.
I think so. It could be a light harvesting device as well. Pigment takes up a color, appears red or yellow or something, because it responds to the sunlight in a certain way. It absorbs a particular colors in sunlight. The radiation that is so absorbed could also be light harvesting, could produce energy, could be energy source for the cell.
And if we are dealing with extraterrestrial cells from someplace else that came into the Earth's atmosphere above Kerala in some kind of cometary ice, and if it turns out that you and Sheffield and Cornell cannot confirm definitely DNA, what are the implications in your thinking for a life form that looks like a yeast cell but does not have DNA?
I suppose I've got to rethink my entire sort of framework of scientific orthodox beliefs. that DNA is crucial to life. That may not be true anymore. I mean, if this is proved to be a biological entity that replicates without DNA, then one has to look for another system, a non-DNA system that can hold information. Because what DNA does, it holds the information that is needed to reproduce. I just can't think of any other mechanism, any other chemical system at the moment, but that doesn't mean that there isn't such a system. It could be that an alien life had evolved a system that is not based on DNA. There's been speculations of silicon-based life and so on. But in this particular instance, the cells that we're seeing are carbon-rich, and they have all the normal carbon, nitrogen, oxygen abundances. So it's not an alien life. It's not a silicon-based life or totally alien chemistry that's involved. So it would surprise me if there is absolutely no DNA. But on the other hand, I think it's also an indication that we just don't know anything about biology that might exist on a bigger scale outside of the Earth. I think we have to keep an open mind as to what types of biology exists on a cosmic scale.
And what is your guess on the red rain of Kerala in terms of being able to prove that it came in from outer space on a comet?
That is a very difficult issue to resolve with absolute certainty. If there was no DNA, then that would be an indication that is almost compelling in the direction of an alien incursion. If there was DNA, then one has to analyze the DNA and make sure that the DNA is totally disjoint from any living form, any known type of yeast that exists on the Earth. And then one might have some ambiguities, but then I think that would also be an indicator of an alien invasion. That would be the nearest one would get to complete proof. And I tend to think that sooner or later, something like the red rain would happen, which would be the smoking gun for panspermia, which would absolutely decisively demonstrate that we are not alone, that our life here is connected to a much bigger life system in the cosmos.
The physicist who originally collected the red rain in Kerala, India, back in 2001 is Professor Godfrey Lewis at Mahatma Gandhi University in Kerala. After 5 years of working with the red rain cells in his laboratory, Professor Lewis is convinced the red rain cells, which multiply by budding from within, similar to earth yeast cells, do not have DNA. Further, he has experimented with putting the red rain cells in a variety of high pressures and very high temperatures to see what happens. He reports that the budding process accelerates, and he has seen as many as 15 small cells inside one adult cell. Professor Wickramasinghe recently visited Professor Lewis's lab in India and asked him if he would present his research findings before a group of some 30 astrobiologists from around the world invited to Cardiff University only 2 weeks from now. And the implication of all this is, eventually we might see headlines about the red rain cells that say, quote, new life from outer space.
Oh, that's compelling, Linda. I got to tell you, and that's his quote about he might have to rethink his thought about DNA as a life form in other regions of this universe. I mean, that's exciting.
It is. This is a much, much bigger story than I think it has been reported so far. And out of the 2 weeks, in 2 weeks, out of that meeting, I will have more news. And in September, later on, along with another subject, I'll try to give whatever is the latest that comes out of 30 astrobiologists sitting with Professor Lewis from India, looking at his work and looking at what they've done at Cardiff, Cornell University, and Sheffield so far, are all in trying to analyze and trying to come up with answers. And in 2 weeks, we may have some kind of consensus.
It's taken them a long time, Linda. That by itself is compelling.
Yes. Science can move slowly when it's up against controversial conclusions.
Well, when we come back, Linda's going to talk about an incredible aggressive military helicopters case in the British crop formation arena. So get ready for that one. And then we'll have some time to chat with her. right as we get up to the top of the hour. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Hey, next Saturday, September 9th, I'm going to be in San Mateo, which is not too far from San Francisco, for the Bay Area UFO Expo. So if you happen to be in that area, drop on by. I'm going to have a meet and greet there from 1 to 3. So I'd like to talk with you. How do you get information on this? Well, the website is www.thebayareaufoexpo.com, or you can call for their tickets for their entire conference, 209-836-4281. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, along with our very own Linda Moulton Howe, her website, earthfiles.com. Linda, you're still chasing the elusive crop formations, aren't you?
Well, they are beautiful, they are mysterious, and for those people who try to push that old rag that 80% are man-made, I'm sorry, but the physical evidence says a completely different story. And the formations that were in England this year, there were not as many as in previous years, but some were astounding.
Well, you know what, Linda? Even if 99% were man-made, that means there's 1% that might be made in this very strange, mysterious way. That's enough for me.
Well, it irritates me that there are people who should know better who, for grandstanding reasons, sort of push this like a political platform. There are a lot of these man-made formations. And the part that I'm interested in is the physical evidence. And when you get into what I and others who are taking seriously, that we're dealing with a phenomenon that interacts with plants and soil in remarkable ways, I think that it should be being reported, frankly, on the 6 o'clock network news. But unfortunately, it has been kind of pushed off of the main radar, and I still think it's one of the most important subjects on the planet.
Well, those that say 80% or so, are they disinformation people?
Well, whatever their motive is, it's like a political party as opposed to something that is objective, and I hope Coast listeners will understand that. And one of the pieces of this puzzle is the helicopter activity over crop formations, and that includes the United States, and that includes all over England. And when I was in southern England from July 30th until August 10th and went out and got caught in that Heathrow absolute, it was like hitting the apocalypse. But for the time that I was there, it was really quite glorious in terms of being able to get out into formations, and helicopter activity was persistent every day over the fields, over patterns. And I watched the military helicopters fly their repeated patterns, specifically over fields where there either have been crop formations or in past years they have come so repeatedly. And there was even helicopter aggression against people in night watches on Adam's Grave and in the silage turnoff at the East Field, which are extremely well known to people who go every year to southern England. And people reported helicopters landing in the night near their tent or their cars, flashing beam lights, and scaring them away for unknown reasons. And that has never happened in those night watch places before this year of 2006. And so the question hangs there, why so much military interest in the formations, and why were they scaring away people? And one friend of mine in England, Andy Buckley, has videotaped helicopters literally chasing the mysterious, what they call plasma balls of light in crop formations. And a couple of years ago, Andy had an off-the-record conversation with a British intelligence agent who was very interested in Andy Buckley's videotapes. And he told Andy that the helicopters were equipped with infrared videotape cameras that could see in a wide range of IF frequencies because there were special military units with missions to chase the lights away from the fields. but he would not tell Andy why the military had orders to chase the mysterious lights from fields and crop formations. And it's very interesting that usually the mysterious lights that are captured on videotapes and photographs are small, maybe about 6 to 12 inches in diameter based on analysis of photographs and tape. But on this recent trip to England, I learned about an encounter between two military helicopters and a glowing red object at least 5 feet in diameter. I was at the Silent Circle Cafe in Churhill talking with the cafe owner, Charles Mallett, and he introduced me to Kate Fenn. She's a community care officer for the adult health and social care team at Savernack Hospital in Marlborough. And a year ago, in early August of 2005, Kate and one of her hospital colleagues were driving toward Ramsbury on the Stitchcomb Farm Road in Savernack Forest. This is a place that has had dramatic and complex formations over the past 15 years, including one that emerged last July made up of 78 triangles in a fractal pattern that covered more than 200 feet in the wheat. And that is the formation the helicopters and this large red glowing object were moving above. And you can see images of that formation and Kate's drawing of what they saw at my news website, earthfiles.com. Now, here is Kate Fenn to describe what happened a year ago in Savernack Forest, Wiltshire, England, between two military helicopters and a large red sphere.
Okay.
We took the little Stitchcomb Road, and I have lived in Wiltshire all my life and very aware of the terrain and the forest and the land here. And as we were travelling on the Stitchcomb Road, a little forest road, we were aware of the trees beginning to move around us, and it was very sunny, bright day, about 11 a.m., We were wondering what it was because it wasn't windy on that particular day. My friend and colleague said she could hear helicopters, and by the time we could hear them, they were very close by and very loud and appeared and roared over the top of the car. They were black military helicopters, and we wondered what they were doing in this area because we don't tend to see those particular helicopters very often in this area. As we were travelling, these helicopters were making the trees very, very wild, and my friend was quite scared because the noise from them, they were very low, and the noise from them was vibrating through the car. We slowed up to see where they had gone, and we actually found that they had gone into one of the first fields that you come to when you take that little road. And I decided to pull over and have a look at exactly what they were doing because they appeared to be hovering there at that time. The noise was extraordinary. The trees were quite wild around us, and I was aware very quickly of a luminous red ball of light that was underneath the helicopters and was moving independently from them. The type of red that it glowed was kind of a ketchup red, a tomato red, which seemed to be contained in the form, and it would have been, I suppose, about 5 feet in diameter, but was moving quite rapidly when it chose to, it seemed, moving across the field and across the formation that was there, which was situated down in a dip, and this ball of light moving and almost playing with these helicopters. And the helicopters were just literally above it, trying to follow it across the field. And we stood and watched for a few minutes, and then a helicopter came across to us and to the car, and we were aware of this ball of light, which I had never seen before. It was not connected in any way to the helicopter itself. It was quite independent of that and seemed to then shoot off, and you just couldn't see it. It moved so fast. And later on that particular day, when we got back to the hospital, everybody that works there had been very aware of the activity of these military helicopters because they had flown so low over the hospital itself. Indeed, as we were talking about it, they came back again and were joined by two others. So it was almost like a full-scale exercise going on out there in the middle of Savernack Forest, which is certainly not normal.
And if you were going to characterize whether the interaction between this 5-foot tomato red glowing sphere and those helicopters was aggressive from the sphere to the helicopters, or aggression from the helicopters to the sphere, what would you say?
I would say it was most definitely from the helicopter to the sphere, the aggression. The aggression didn't seem to come in any shape or form from the sphere. And in actual fact, it seemed to be very, if you could say it was confident, very smooth moving and not bothered by the helicopters at all.
Would it be fair to say that the red light was actually playing cat and mouse with the helicopters?
Absolutely. Had we not been shaking in our boots, I think it would have been fun to watch, you know, for longer.
Did you hear any sound that was associated with that red sphere?
Nothing at all.
And if the British military is in an aggressive stance against these mysterious lights, have you and your colleagues speculated about why that might be?
We did wonder that very same thing, why the military was being so aggressive and so interested in it. Pure fear, I would imagine. Pure fear.
And some people in England think that the British military and the United States military are working together with infrared frequencies to identify these plasmas that in some condition cannot be seen by the human eye, and in others that they can be seen and videotaped and photographed. And if Kate, if her guess were correct, why in the world would any military or governments be afraid of these plasmas interacting with cereal crops and grasses around the planet? What is the other hypothesis? That they know something about whatever the intent is of the crop formations and they are trying to stop them. Either way, George, it seems to me very clear that in the constant and persistent aggression of military helicopters in the fields, and not only in England, in other places of the planet, in relationship to crop formations, it automatically implies a tremendous amount of government knowledge about this crop circle mystery that they will not make any comment on. And that is part of what keeps me going in this story. And interestingly, when I was in Geneseo, Illinois, I was there from August 24th to August 26th, investigating five circles in soybeans that I'll tell you some more details about here in a moment.
Okay.
But the second day we were there, my colleague Ted Robertson from the Independent Crop Circle Research Association and I had gotten samples, plant samples and soil samples from the night before, and we had driven them into Davenport to FedEx so that they could get to biophysicist W.C. Levengood on Saturday morning as fast as we could get them there so they would be fresh.
Sure.
So we were not at the Jim and Chris Stahl farm. It's a 90-acre farm in Geneseo, which is about 20 minutes south of what is known as the Quad City area, and the Quad City is Davenport and Betancourt, Iowa.
And Moline, Illinois.
And Rock Island.
Yep.
Rock Island and Moline. And you fly into Moline and you drive 20 minutes down to this gorgeous, gorgeous farming country of Geneseo. And when we got there that afternoon, Jim was really, actually, he was almost excited as somebody who had never, ever encountered crop formations in his entire quarter century as a farmer. He's been there for a quarter century, and suddenly he's got five circles on in his soybeans and a helicopter. He gets a photograph. It comes and circles low over his circle, over his the five circles in the pattern, and he runs and gets his digital camera, and as he said, he was stumbling trying to get out there to get photographs, and he had been out over the formation for some time circling low before he finally got his camera on it. He got one really good close-up, which is at earthfiles.com, and he got one as it turned to profile, and it's clearly an H-46 or H-47 helicopter, which is used for transport either by the Navy Marines or by the Army. Now, Rock Island has an installation, and there are others in the state of Illinois. Well, when you go back just 2-3 years ago, 2003, when my colleagues from the independent research group from Ohio were investigating a amazing crop formation in Mayville, Wisconsin, that a farmer saw go down in front of him during a thunderstorm. This was an incredible story. And they're there investigating this amazing pattern when what comes over, helicopter, and then who drives up, somebody in military fatigues, what do? They walk out into the formation. Jeffrey Wilson and his friends come up to this military man and ask him what they're doing, and this is the answer, that he was part of a military unit that had a mission to investigate crop circles in the United States, and that they were temporarily based out of a barracks in some place, I think it was in Minnesota or Wisconsin, but that it had originally been formed at Scott Air Force Base in Illinois.
Oh, sure. Very familiar with that. As a matter of fact, several years ago, a large triangular-shaped object was seen near Scott Air Force Base, Milstat, by several Milstat police officers. These guys chased it, Linda, for some time. An incredible story, but everything close to Scott Air Force Base.
Yes. Well, it's 200 miles, I think it's south of Geneseo, but nevertheless, there is a lot of military action in the state of Illinois, and here was this large H-46 or H-47 right over and focused on what? These five circles. Here's the amazing part in this story, because rarely do we have a deputy sheriff who is willing to come out from a sheriff's office and did so on the call of Saturday morning on August 19th, when Jim Stahl, for the very first time, going down in his pickup truck, thinks he's got diseased soybeans or somebody's mm-hmm. been in there. He doesn't know, and he gets out of his truck, and he says, Linda, I was the first person to walk into that field. He said, I didn't even know how to enter. And these crops, when I walked out there, they were as high as my shoulders. They're about 4.5 feet tall. These are really big, robust plants. And he said, I had to find out what was I seeing. And he walks 50 feet through this tangle of these big, robust soybeans and comes into a circle that we now know, the three main circles, average 52 feet in diameter. And on either side of the center circle were two smaller circles, each approximately 27 feet in diameter, separated, George, by 12 feet, a 12-foot wall of standing soybeans. There's no path. There's no path going either way, not going north or south on either side of that center circle. And that he was so stunned. And he said, you know, Linda, it never occurred to me that I should walk out the same path that I came in. And it turns out that on Saturday morning, this totally pristine pattern, the farmer and the deputy sheriff made three paths into it in the process of investigation.
Yeah.
But they never, ever walked through the 12-foot wall of plants to the northern circle. And bless his heart, his son-in-law called the Geneseo Fire Protection Department and asked for the fire truck with the big ladder to come out. And they did, and they got aerials as high as they could get on the fire truck, looking down on this pattern, showing there was not one path from that center circle to that far northern circle, and that the only three paths going in were made and testified to by the farmer and the deputy.
It's just incredible stuff.
Oh, and there's so many anomalies. And for listeners, you can go to earthfiles.com. I've got three big reports there right now that have really dozens and dozens of images. This is a very, very important story.
All right, Linda, thanks so much. You take care. We'll probably talk to you, of course, in September.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you.
Linda Moulton Howe. She covers all kinds of strange stories and investigative stories for us. And again, her website is earthfiles.com. In a moment, a couple hours with Pat Buchanan as we talk about illegal immigration, his latest work called State of Emergency, The Third World Invasion and Conquest of America. So stay with us. The last hour of this evening, we'll have open lines. I'll be back.